Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Tech Connect Podcast. I'm John Wharton.
And I'm Dean Reverman.
Dean, it's, we often talk about the future.
Yes.
Like looking to the future,
yes.
Especially in an industry with a big technology focus.
Right. Yes.
We look ahead all the time. Tech is intertwined with innovation. What's new?
Yes.
What's next? But sometimes it is important to talk a little bit about where we've been as well.
Yes. A little context.
Look back a little bit, reflect, because that can sometimes be a way to help you understand better about where you might be going or understand that the things you think are just a now problem are actually problems that are.
Been around for quite some time.
Yeah. Part of every, decade or two.
Stop freaking out. We've been through this before.
Exactly. Yeah. So today we have a special guest with us to talk a little bit about, reflect and share on his experiences. It's Dave Judy from Code. He's retiring soon. And I don't know, for some reason, he wants to spend part of his last days talking to us. Not sure why, but okay, we'll take it.
We'll take the industry knowledge
sure. So he's going to share some of his experiences, which I think can help us understand a little bit about, how tech may change, challenges may change, business goals may change, resellers and what they do may change, but a lot of those changes are stuff that again is kind of cyclical and may happen over and over again. And maybe you can give us a little insight into like, hey, this stuff that we're freaking out about now, well, we freaked out about something similar a decade ago.
I love
it. Got through that, or 2 decades
ago. Sage advice. That's what we have coming.
Exactly.
Yes.
So that's what we're getting into today. We're going to talk a little bit about, his time in the business, what he's learned from in the B2B technology industry. He's going to share some lessons with us, things that can maybe help us grow, professionally and personally.
Nice.
He's going to talk about an interesting little project he's working on, because you know how it is, even if you're retiring, you still got stuff you want to do.
Oh, God, yeah.
And he's got a cool little project that he's working on. I was going to talk a little bit about, and then give some advice to the next generation coming up in this channel, which
Perfect.
Is also not us at this point either. So. all that plus your usual value to the VAR. What's tech connected with us? It's time to plug in and get connected.
Welcome to the Tech Connect Podcast. It's time to get connected.
All right, as I mentioned today, our guest is Dave Judy. He is a senior regional sales manager for Code Corporation, which is a Brady company now.
Yes.
So
great
Dave,
partner.
Let's kick this out here by talking a little bit about you. Give us the rundown of your career. You've been at it for a while, but you've also been in this industry for a good long time too. So give us the background of your career and how you got to where you are.
All right. Well, first of all, I probably in the technology business, I've been with Code for about 20 years. And that was a career change, complete career change, career path change for me. Prior to that, I had been in the retail business, and I'd done that for 20 years. And then I got into some retail sales for about 10 years after that, and went to college, actually, when I was 40 years old, went back to college and finished my degree at 45 and then went into the technology area. And the idea that I was going to become a coder, a programmer, that was what my education was leaning towards. And kind of discovered that really no one wanted to hire a 45-year-old programmer. So I morphed into an application engineer position with Code right off the bat. And it was love at first bite, so to speak, They kind of throw you in there and you got to learn the bits and the bytes. And I kind of have an engineering brain to begin with. So, I think about things rather than people. And it was a good fit. And after 3 years as an application engineer, Code kind of switched their direction on how we were handling sales. And we put on a direct sales team. And I had some sales experience just prior to Code. So they asked me if I wanted to be part of the sales team. And I did. And I was pretty good at it because I discovered that sales, even though most people think of in terms of hard sales, you've got to go out and you've got to knock on the doors and you got to convince somebody to buy something. I kind of discovered that because of my background and how much I knew about barcode readers and barcodes and the whole workflow process that goes along with barcodes and barcode readers, I was much better salesperson when I tried to explain how barcode readers worked, what barcodes were used for, how they could help in their workflow, and just came at the sales process as a teacher rather than as a salesperson. And that approach worked very well for me. And, you know, when people come to you and ask you questions, knowing that you're not really interested in turning a sale that day, then they're more interested in talking to you about how to solve their problems, because that's really kind of what it's all about. So, like I said, 20 years with Code's been a very good career for me. I've loved every minute of it. There's been a lot of changes in the industry, a lot of maturation on some of the verticals that we've been involved with. So we've had to change things in the way we do things. And it's just been a very, very satisfying career.
Yeah, I always love the stories of, and I feel like we get these a lot where you talk to somebody about their past. Like, mm-hmm. Well, I didn't start off in the technology industry, but kind of ended up here in some way.
Yeah.
And I also appreciate the idea of the going back to school when you're a little bit later in life. I did the same thing. I didn't take my opportunity as deeply in as concertedly as I should have when I was younger, went back in my 30s, to finally flesh out my degree. And I think it's an important lesson of like, hey, if you miss your opportunity, there's still the opportunity to go back and do it.
Yeah.
And, to be honest, I think I probably had an easier time of it than I would have back in my 20s anyway.
Absolutely. So. Yeah.
Definitely more focused when you go back to school than some of the younger kids are and stuff.
Yes. Well, it helped too. Like I was doing like a business degree. I remember like kind of feeling like there's times that I was sort of, teaching the class a little bit like, oh, I've kind of been in business actually for a few years and now I just am trying to do this. So
hold my beer, professor. Yeah, I got this one.
let me tell you about some of the things that I know about too. So.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, that's a great history and a great background. And obviously lends credence to your time in the channel. I mean, again, even 20 years is a lot of time in this particular industry for things to have changed and grown different, than where they used to be.
Yeah.
So, let's talk about that. Let's talk about your time in B2B technology with Code and again, I like that you've had kind of some of the data, the background, the kind of technical experience, and then also on the sales side too. What kept you going with this? What kept you at Code for this time? What kept you in this industry? What are some of the more like significant and unexpected changes that you've encountered along the way that you didn't expect to happen in this industry?
Well, I think what kept me in it is just the idea there's two different areas that Code's always been involved with in as far as sales process. We love the channel. In fact, I was the first channel manager for Code. I remember knocking on Blue Star's doors very early on. You had no idea who we were and trying to get you guys to pay attention to who we were, because we understood that in order to sell through the channel that, you were a big part of that. So, I was part of that transition from a direct sales company to a channel sales company right from the very beginning, and going out and finding resellers who were involved in barcode reading industry of some form, and then trying to get them to understand who Code was and what we did and why we were a little bit different. And then also, because of our background in the direct sales channel early on, we maintain a lot of those relationships with the end users. And we love that because we get a chance to talk to them, to hear what their problems are. So that was always very interesting to me, to be able to handle both sides, not only the channel, but also on the end user. And that was something that was very, very fulfilling to me. I could walk into a customer. I didn't have to worry, an end user. I didn't have to worry about them buying the product. All I had to worry about was helping them solve their problem. So that kind of took the pressure of sales off of my shoulder once they got to the point where they agreed that Code was a good fit for them and we were a good fit for them or they were a good fit for us. Then they could buy through whatever channel partner they had, and we just helped facilitate that sale at that point in time. So that was always very interesting to me. Now, as you are probably aware, that the majority of our sales are with healthcare. We are huge in the healthcare industry. We are indeed all of our products that we sell in the healthcare for healthcare. We didn't try to take a retail product or an industrial product and plug it into healthcare. We did just the opposite. We figured out what healthcare wanted. And so my relationships with the healthcare industry has been very strong and long. But as an application engineer, when I first started with Code, I worked with everybody. And I actually found working with those hard to solve problems that every reseller has, that they're just looking, and sometimes for a long time, for solutions for for their customers. I found those fascinating. I love walking in saying, okay, what can we do? What do they need to have done? What can we do? Is there a middle ground here where we can work together? And the nice thing about that was that not only are you solving an end user problem, but you're kind of helping the reseller become the hero. And they love that. And so that was always a good partnership with both the end user and the reseller. So, you know, there's been enough in this business, is, you know, because it's been so fascinating on how to integrate barcode readers into workflow challenges, that it's kept me very on point and interested in the industry.
You know, when you think about it, I love that phrase that you had there, hard to solve problems, because that's what the channel is all about, right? Mm-hmm. In the sense that, yeah, sometimes you got to figure stuff out. There is no easy answer along the way, but the channel and through the ecosystem has been there. And I think probably you could probably comment here a little bit, in the sense that, you know, the maturation, as you mentioned, you know, I think the industry has matured significantly, obviously, while you've been around in it, right, Dave? Seen a lot of maturity through there. And again, I think it's what I love about the channel is, you know, there is no problem that's unsolvable. We just need to roll up our sleeves and get in there and do it, as opposed to other parts of the channel, maybe, or it's just easy sales, right, you know, like, right. Oh, you just need this software here. Here's a license for it. And if you don't need it, go away.
Right.
but here, you know, what's the challenge? Oh, okay. Well, we got to figure this out. We got to roll up our sleeves. We got to do that. And it's nice being in a mature type of technology to enable that. You think, Dave?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, there's still challenges, because, you know, when you're trying to integrate technology into a workflow, it's not always a cut and paste type of environment. Sometimes you're having to do things customization wise that will allow that device that you're trying to integrate in there to work seamlessly with what they're trying to do on a workflow. I'm more in a training position now than I'm in a sales position, but I try to tell everybody that I talk to, it's not about putting a barcode reader on a desk any longer and say, here you go, next best thing to slice bread. It's how can I save you money in your workflow? You know, seconds add up to dollars. And if I can shave a few seconds off a workflow process by doing this simple little adjustment within the barcode reader, you know, the ROI is huge.
And comment a little bit, because you mentioned the code strong in healthcare. Mm-hmm. You know, as I kind of take a step back, I'm always fascinated to see where barcode technology has manifested itself out in the world. You know, what are some other industries or verticals that you're surprised by the growth or the application, whether it's within healthcare or outside of healthcare, that's like, oh, well, you know, yeah, I guess it applies over here, but I don't know. Do you have any comments there, and maybe some surprise growth areas?
That's a good question. So I guess what, let me just talk about first what we discovered in healthcare and how that might apply. In healthcare, they have no control over the barcodes that are coming in. They have no control over the size of the packaging that's coming in. They have very little control over any of those things that they require to have barcodes on them, other than NDC codes on drugs are pretty standard. But the type of barcode, the size of the barcode, the media that the barcode printed on, hospitals have no control over that whatsoever. So whatever barcode reader they choose had to be good at everything. And so from a broader perspective, what we learn in healthcare and how we dealt with the healthcare issues are really transferable to many, many other industries out there. There's a lot of industries that control absolutely every aspect of what's coming in their door. But those industries that don't, you know, we are very well situated to help them in solving problems where they may not be able to tell a supplier, hey, you need to put this type of barcode on this size of label with this size of font. They just don't have that kind of control over their vendors and stuff. So, you know, we work really well in those situations. Does that translate to a specific industry? I don't really say that I've seen that, but it generally speaking, you know, because what we do in healthcare is able to be applied in so broadly everywhere else that it works out.
And that's part of the reason why we see barcodes everywhere now.
Yeah.
It's like literally everywhere, which is good for us. Yeah. That's a good thing. You know, you made a comment, Dave, on the direct sales, and a lot of our audience are ISVs or software development companies that are always interested. You know, they start out in a direct sales model and they're always curious about the channel and what the channel can do for them. Maybe could you go a little deeper there and what, you know, some of the benefits you think of like a software company, you know, getting into the channel and why they should consider, you know, working with partners, working within our ecosystem?
Well, I've been with this company for so long that a good day when we first started out, we were getting a fax for 10 barcode readers. That was a good day. And that was our direct sales model. You're waiting for somebody to bring you an order and stuff. And, you know, you do have a little contact with customers. Sometimes your marketing is small and you can't have the outreach. But I am a huge fan of the channel. And I think that they have really made our company what it is today. Because without the channel, without those people working for resellers and for VARs and everyone else involved in the channel, without their feet on the street, without them looking for a place to put us, without them trying to solve a problem for a customer, we would probably never be where we are. We'd still be waiting for that fax.
The fax to come in, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
So you know, you can only hire so many direct salespeople, and it's never enough to cover the market. Where when the channel's involved, you've got bodies and feet and brains and hands all over the place.
I love it. That's it right there.
Yep, yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really appreciate the sentiment too of staying close to your customers and recognizing that even though you're not direct anymore, even though you are part of this channel, that's still understanding what end customers are doing. Because I think it's sometimes something in this channel that if you're not careful, you can get a little too far away from them, especially at the vendor manufacturer level where, you know, you're there and then you've got a distributor like us, then you've got the reseller, and then you've got the end customer. Maybe you got an ISV stuck in there somewhere in the middle too.
Yeah.
A lot of layers between what you're doing and the folks that are eventually actually going to use your products. And I think it could be easy sometimes to be like, well, the channel's taking care of that, so I can back away from those end customers. But I think it makes you better at making products. It makes you better at positioning products. It makes you better at helping us as a distributor and then the
you
resellers.
You mean to stay connected.
To understand, to still like live and breathe in the life of the end user. And I think healthcare is that perfect example of that, because I feel like healthcare is one of those industries that everybody wants a piece of it because there's a lot of money
so
there.
Money, yeah.
Everyone's trillions, like, man, I want to get in there.
Right.
But they don't think about like, all right, what do I need to actually do? Because trust me, everyone wants to get in there and they're all throwing out their ideas and trying to market and knocking on doors or trying to wiggle their way into that industry in some way. But most of them are just like, all right, I'm going to beat the door. And if you open it, I'm just going to scream at you what I've got and hope that you open a little further. When in reality, you've got to understand, just like you said, you understand a little bit more about who they are, what they want, what actually matters to them. Mm-hmm. And then and granted, that works in any industry, but I think healthcare in particular is one where if you don't at least understand who they are and what they're dealing with, they have no reason to open the door to you, because there, again, are dozens and dozens, hundreds even, of companies that are trying to do the exact same thing that you potentially are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, the healthcare's changed as well in that, you know, workflows have been modified. They've been they've evolved to the point where, you know, what they started out with as far as technology may not be the best choice any longer. And you know, our involvement with end users gives us the opportunity to even if they're not a current customer, it gives us an opportunity to present what we've brought to the industry and how we've helped their workflow and save their nurses time or money and made sure things were better for their patients. Whereas a reseller who's, or a VAR who's working with a healthcare, there is a tendency to not want to upset the apple cart. And if a reseller is comfortable selling a hospital a particular product and they've been selling it to them for years, they may not always be doing their customer, the hospital, the biggest benefit by showing them what's new and what's progressed within their industry as well. So I know they want to, but sometimes it's just easier to keep selling what they've always been selling. So we like to have direct interaction with healthcare because we can present new things. We can also ask them where they think our technology should be going and what we should be building in order for being ready for that next cutting edge change in their industry that they're also looking for.
It enables the solution, right? When you have hardware manufacturers like Code, you know, out there with deep knowledge of what's going on in the industry, well, that enables them from a product standpoint to excel there and let the channel deal with, you know, the relationships and finding the new one and all those kinds of good things. Yep.
At least arms you with that.
I like that term solution because that's, you know, that's what ultimately we're trying to get to is a solution. And it may be an integrated solution, but and rarely is it just a new barcode reader. Changing technology from one manufacturer to another is costly. You know, we recognize that. And when a company or a hospital is looking to make a change, it's not just the cost of the barcode reader any longer. It's the cost of all the cabling. It's the cost of the mounting. It's the cost of the fixtures. It's cost of the labor that it takes to change everything out. It's not insignificant at all. So we're very cognizant of that. And if there's a change that need to be made, you know, it needs to be done in a way that, or the decision needs to be made because it's the best thing to do and for long term in the hospital.
Well, let's open this conversation a little bit broader. And you know, and again, you've had all this time in business and industry in general, and just your time in the workforce and everything you've probably learned over time. So maybe give us some fundamental lessons that you've learned, you know, that's helped you succeed over time, whether it's been with Code in this industry or even your time in retail before that. What's some of the stuff that's helped you grow professionally or personally during that time?
I think one of the things as I reflect back that I've learned that made the biggest impact is that I'm not a person who likes to be in the front of the crowd or the front of the line or, you know, being the focus of anything. I've learned about my personality a long time ago. I'm much better at being part of a team or supporting someone. So I learned early on that if I made my superiors, my boss look good, if I made a customer look good, I didn't need to take credit for that. They knew who helped them with that and not worry about taking credit for something as opposed to making sure that the people who were seeking that solution or in charge of making those decisions got the credit as they deserved and stuff. So that's helped taking a lot of pressure off of me once I realize it's not about me and it's more about, you know, helping somebody else succeed. I found that if I help my bosses succeed, they kind of pull me up with them.
Absolutely. And, you know, so what, you know, on that note, talk a little bit about the importance of like you continuously training or, you know, being knowledgeable about what's going on in the marketplace and things of that nature in order to be, you know, that good steward, if you will, kind of behind the scenes. It takes a little bit of learning, right? Training ongoing and things of that nature.
Yeah. I'm not quite sure I'm following your question on that. Can you expand that a little bit?
Yeah. So like, you know, I wonder to myself, okay, so like if I see my role as being, you know, kind of an advisor and things of that nature, I want to be involved in what's happening in the marketplace and continuously train on those types of things. What are the new technologies that are out there? What are the new softwares being brought into that? Have you found that it's necessary to kind of keep your thumb on the pulse of what's happening in the industry and then being able to apply those things, especially when you get into solution selling, right? In order to understand the solution, you have to know the components that are going into that. So I just imagine it would be important to, you know, that's just my personal thing. Mm-hmm. Well, you might as well stay continuously trained on that stuff and just have it in your DNA to kind of continuously learn.
Yeah, I agree. I'm probably not as good as keeping up on the software and stuff like that as other people are. But what I'm more focused on is listening to what the customer's problems are, paying attention to what they're saying. Not being so fixed on trying to tell them my solution to their problem as listening to what their problem is and then trying to tweak or rebalance my products to fit what they're trying to do. Like I said, it's the days of slapping a barcode reader on a desk and saying this is the next best thing to slice bread are over. When I've been the most successful is when I've been able to take what we have and modify it somehow so that it's a perfect fit for what the customer is trying to do, because ultimately that's their perspective. That's what they have, something that they're trying to do. I don't have something I'm trying to fit into them. They're trying to tell me what they need, and I'm trying to modify what I've got to fit within their vision, not what my vision is for what they should be doing.
You know, and on that point, Dave, do you think it's important, because you've got kind of the sales aspect and the product management aspect, do you think it's important for sales to give feedback back to the product folks on what they're hearing in the marketplace? And is that an important part of the feedback loop so that products can advance and whatnot?
Oh, it's critical. Absolutely critical. It can't, we used to make the mistake of trying to have our engineers and software people design a product, and it was all really cool. You know, they did a great job, but it wasn't what the customer wanted. And so you have to integrate not only what salespeople are hearing, but what the customers are saying. We have a very extensive voice of the customer program here at Code, where, you know, we don't make anything without talking to X amount of customers about what they're doing, what they want to have done, and take a look, is this product and these features that we've got that we're thinking about, what do you think about those kind of things? So that feedback for a successful product, it is absolutely critical. You can't really launch a product based off of what engineers think that product should be. It's got to be based off of what not only customers, but the industry, you know, where the industry is going. And I'm happy to say that for the last 10 years, Code has really paid attention to the customers. You know, we've had some launches of products that we salespeople go, yeah, you think we can sell that? And it doesn't always work out very well because it's an engineer-based product and not a customer-focused product.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's good advice. I mean, when you think about resellers out there, I mean, maybe some of them or some sales reps on the resellers, you know, they think they're in a box and they don't really engage with the ecosystem. I'm glad to hear you say that, Dave, because to me, it's always been beneficial to have that camaraderie, that feedback that's happening out there. I mean, as a sales representative, you know, typically you're on the front lines, right? Mm-hmm. And so the feedback that you can report back, depending on, you know, how what your business acumen is and feedback, you know, oh, our product sucks in this way, you know, no, that's not, you don't want to tell a product engineer that they're doing what they do sucks, but you know what I mean?
Right.
But I mean, but that feedback's so important for, especially in solution selling that we're getting into more and more these days. You have to learn, you have to apply, you have to give that feedback back to the people that can do something about it.
Yeah.
So. Well, I very much appreciate also your attitude of like, it's not about me. It's not about me trying to be at the front and getting all the credit and the pats on the back or whatever. You know, it's about what the customers ultimately want and what they need.
Mm-hmm.
And I also appreciate too the idea of, look, you don't have to be the absolute expert in everything.
No.
Who is? I know, exactly. Very few people actually are.
Right.
Sometimes, especially when you're a salesperson, sometimes the best thing you can be doing is asking a lot of questions, doing a lot of listening, gathering a lot of information, and then when you're done, making sure that they know that you listened,
mm-hmm.
that you've got the right information, clarifying what you need to clarify, mm-hmm. and then basically telling them, like, hey, you know what? I've got brilliant people that are working with me that I'm going to go take this back to, and I'll be back, you know, tomorrow or next week with a solution to exactly what your problem is here.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes there's too many people that try to, they try to skip that middle portion there. They try to be like, all right, well, I've got someone on the phone. I've got to figure this out right now. I've got to give them a solution right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give them the first thing that popped in my head or whatever the hot new product is mm-hmm. that I'm told that we need to go out and sell.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just shove it across the table and say, this is what I think you need. Even though you may not have actually bothered to ask the right kind of questions, you didn't listen enough, you weren't paying enough attention. And that comes across to customers. People mm-hmm. recognize when they're being sold to
right.
versus Rather when than, you're being a consultant yeah, and being yeah. a, an and advisor trying, of exactly, some sort.
Yeah.
So I think that's good stuff.
there's a term that I like to use. It's short-term sales versus long-term sales. I mean, everybody is, you know, when you've got a quota to fulfill this month, you're chasing short-term sales and stuff. That may be a one-time sale if you're not presenting the right product. I was always fortunate with Code in that when we were held responsible for our sales, it wasn't on a month-to-month basis, it was on a year-to-year basis. So as long as I came in at the end of the year where I needed to be, I was good. So I was focused on long-term sales, and a lot of that's repeat sales. And so I always knew that when I developed my territory, if I developed it wide with a lot of mix of new customers and existing customers, I was always going to be good. So, you know, you can go for that short-term sale, and that might be the only sale you get out of it, or you can take the approach, I want a long-term customer, and keep that customer coming back to you year after year, not only to sell products that you've been selling them, but because you've become a trusted advisor at that point, they're going to come to you for advice in the future. That was always more important to me than that short-term sale.
Yep. And the way to make that mature is to keep that ecosystem happy.
Yep.
and healthy, you know, with feedback and things of that nature. Yeah,
exactly.
For sure. Yeah.
Well, Dave, as I mentioned up at the top of the show, just because you're retiring doesn't mean you're not still working on stuff or don't have exciting new things. You're not just coasting to the finish line here. I mean, I wouldn't blame you if you did, because trust me, it sounds appealing to me sometimes too. But you got a project that you're working on. Emily Scales, your marketing person over there at Code, when she, you know, recommended you for the show, said, hey, you need to talk to Dave about his digital driver's licensing project. So
ooh, what's that?
Tell us what is that? What are you hoping to accomplish, and what's happening next on the project?
So we could probably kill two birds at the same time with something that is happening and also new technology at the same time here. So digital driver's licenses are starting to be adopted throughout the United States and Canada. And Utah, which was where we are one of the first states that have implemented a digital driver's license. And it's you all have your physical driver's license where you have your picture on the front and there's a barcode on the back. A digital driver's license, because of the security aspects of or lack of on the card driver's licenses, the digital driver's license adopted a very much higher security feature set. So when you have a digital driver's license, there's a barcode there, and that barcode changes every 30 seconds, at least with the one we're working with here. And it's a token. It's not the actual barcode like you'd see on your your digital or in your card driver's license. So when you have this token, you scan this token, and then it takes it and does a verification process. And then it, once verified, it goes out to the state's database and pulls the information right from the state's database. And it's a kind of a two-pronged process for us. You have the barcode reader, which reads that barcode, and then we have a piece of software that we developed that goes out and does the validation. And in the digital driver's license world, the way it's set up right now is that when you have your digital driver's license, there's a mobile device that the retailer or the TSA people have, that they scan it, and then you are able to then validate that barcode and see that person is the right person. And that mobile device that's been used out there, it's kind of falling short of what the industry needs. Because if you think in terms of in Utah here, at bars or restaurants or liquor stores that sell alcohol, then how many check stands do you have that you're going to need to be able to validate that digital driver's license? And currently, every mobile device that's out there, it's got to be owned by the store or the establishment in order to do that. And it's an expensive prospect when you think, okay, I've got 5 check stands. Do I need 5 mobile devices? And if I can't afford 5 mobile devices, what do I do then? I still have to validate this driver's license. So we've stepped up with our CR5200 barcode reader, made it, which is our presentation barcode reader, made it not only able to scan the card driver's license as well as any of the soft or hard goods that are coming through. You scan those and they just ring up like regular items, but then you have your driver's license for age-restricted products. Scan your hard card driver's license and it tells you if you're age-appropriate to buy those things. And then it communicates back to the point-of-sale system that, yeah, it is, this person is legal and satisfy the security requirements of the point-of-sale system. But the mobile driver's license has kind of created a conflict there because now you have a secondary device that is has the mobile verification application on it, but there's no direct connection to the point of sale system. So we've created a back-end software that the 5200 recognizes that it's a mobile driver's license, scans it, goes into our application, runs the API in order to validate that mobile driver's license, pulls that information from whatever state that driver's license is from, and sends it back to the point of sale system, just as if it was a hard card driver's license. So we're able to communicate both with the person who's validating that driver's license, mobile driver's license, because we do a pop-up that shows the image of the person that owns that driver's license as well. We get that from the state. So now they have a positive verification that the picture on their screen is the person that's holding that mobile driver's license. It's worked really well. It's very new still. It's in the implementation process, but we're really happy about the direction it's going. And we see a lot of upside for us on this because we're kind of unique. We've kind of crossed that bridge between a commercial need and the ideological setup that the mobile driver's license people are initially proposing.
That sounds like a cool solution. Now, how hard would the install be, though? Are you expecting, you know, for the reseller to go in, and this is a bolt-on API, right? So in the sense that, are you gearing it towards really any reseller who has a little bit of capabilities would be able to integrate this fairly easily into the POS? Yeah.
No, actually, it is almost a standalone application.
I see.
You just download the application and we work seamlessly because the POS systems generally are taking USB data. In other words, you know, you can enter in, if you have a keyboard, you can enter in the birth date. If you've got a barcode reader that's set up or integrates with the point of sale system, you scan the barcode on a card, that barcode reader pulls out the birth date off the card and then sends only it to the point of sale system. With the mobile driver's license, all we're doing is in the background is doing that validation process and then taking that same information that the point of sale system already needs for their security features and then just plugging that in. So the nice thing is and that is one direction that some of these companies are going. They're trying to get point of sale ISVs to integrate the capability of doing the validation themselves, but we've kind of taken it offline and say, okay, we can do that for you on the barcode reader side. All you need to have at this point in time is a Windows application that you can run our little application in the background at.
Brilliant. Man, yep, makes this sense.
Now, from a channel perspective, it's license sales. You know, it's a software license that you sell to the retailers out there. We're still working on pricing on stuff on that, but you know, those are all problems that we're working to solve, and I expect that we'll have those things wrapped up pretty soon.
Very
That's
nice,
fantastic. Yep, I cool. can tell you're passionate about this, and I like the idea of this because I'm ready to finally get rid of my wallet.
Oh yeah,
I feel like, you know, we can make mobile payments.
Do you have one of those Costanza wallets, by the way? You know what I'm talking about?
It's not that bad. Okay. Like, yeah. I try not to to fill it up with that much stuff, but it's still bigger than I would like to be for something shoved.
You're ready
to
go
pocket.
Full digital, yes.
Yeah, I mean, because I can do digital payments now. You can do loyalty cards. Yeah, you can get your tickets for, you know, the airport or concerts or events or whatever on there. Like, I feel like, you know, the driver's license has been the one thing that you just couldn't, you know, digitally have on your phone to just leave your wallet at home and feel free going to. I still think I would have a hard time doing it. I'd be like, feel weird not having
still
my
need
wallet.
Something in there, right?
Yeah. Exactly. So I guess it'd be at this point, you know, the same way as like, I feel weird if I go somewhere without my phone. So, but yeah, I'm looking forward to this. I think this is some cool, innovative new technology that hopefully is finds its way out there, you know, nationwide, not just some limited states and countries at this point. Mm-hmm. So good stuff.
Yeah. So there's a website you can go to on the, it's the AMVA website that will show you how many states are, have adopted or have some sort of adoption for a mobile driver's license. And I think there's about a dozen right now.
It'll grow.
But there's nearly every state out there has got some sort of legislative action going on to accept or adopt a digital driver's license.
I'm sure.
I feel like this is one of those things that, like, as you know, the younger generation takes over, it's just, not, it's going to become commonplace.
Have
it's going
to
be
have.
Expected. Exactly. Everything revolves around our devices.
Yes.
So.
Tying your phone to one more thing. Right?
That's right.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. For good or ill. I thought, that's what we're doing, I guess. So, all right. Well, hey, we'll wrap up here in a moment with Dave telling a little bit more advice for some of the younger next generation coming up in our channel.
All right.
But first, wanted to quickly take a moment to thank, as always, our sponsors here on the Tech Connect podcast. We appreciate all the folks that sponsor the show, sponsor our Tech Connect program, and thereby are also supporting the podcast as well. Mm-hmm. If you like the show, we need to hear from you. At the same call out I give every week, I need likes, I need subscribes, I need reviews.
Reviews,
I need screenshots sent to me, whatever you need. I don't care. Comments left behind. Any of those things, if you take a quick moment and do those things, believe it or not, it does help out very much. Helps with all those algorithm things when someone's leaving reviews and comments and
this
likes.
This is true.
It helps other people find the show. And for that matter, recommend it to someone. If there's someone you work with or, you know, or even maybe a customer that you feel like, you know, hey, you know, go check out this show, like especially minute 12 or something like that. They have a great conversation about X, and I think you would be
interested
in hearing
that.
About that.
Yes.
And of course, we want to hear from you and what you're interested in hearing about on the show, because this show is only as good as what, you know, we put into it to give to you and what you're getting out of it. So leave us comments, you know, or send us a message about what you want to hear about on the show. There's always a link in the show notes where you can send in your ideas for the show. Mm-hmm. Doing that will get you a Tech Connect podcast t-shirt. We're getting closer to the new t-shirts being printed.
Okay.
Marco was showing me some new
designs
and ideas. Mm-hmm. He's got some cool ideas for what he's doing there. So I think we're pretty soon, hopefully, to go to print on those and actually get some new t-shirts out.
Can I have one?
I guess so. I'll let you have one. But we've got actual listeners we're going to give some to you first.
Yes, okay, so, yes. They get it first, yes. For
sure. Exactly. And, of course, you can always find us. You can find us on Blue Star's LinkedIn page. There's always recaps of every episode each week. You're welcome to leave comments there. Or you can also email us at any time, techconnect@bluestarinc.com. All right, let's wrap things up here, starting with value to the VAR.
Yes.
And this is where, you know, I want Dave to to put on his, you know, transitional hat as you're heading out of the industry and you see this new generation coming in and taking over. Do you have some advice for those folks coming in that, you know, maybe, you know, they're gung-ho about all the new technology, but maybe they're not quite sure about how the channel works just yet, and things maybe you've learned that could be helpful to someone coming in? And I know you mentioned before we went on that, like, you know, you weren't necessarily always up and current with the hottest, newest technology, but is there anything that if you were still going to go for another 10, 20 years or so that you would be interested in seeing as the new next technology that you think is going to make a big impact on our channel?
Well, as far as up and coming people who, you know, are starting to get into this, I would say if you don't look at this as a sales job, but rather as an opportunity to help people and teach them what's going on. I've been so impressed with the younger generations, the people that I've worked with over the years, our current group of regional sales managers who are just so smart and are really on top of the technology. But none of that really makes any difference until you can relate what you've got or what you know to a customer in a way that makes sense to them. So pay attention to your customers. Make sure you're satisfying their needs and not just trying to sell them something you think that they should have. That's always been good advice that I've gotten, and it seems to have served me well. As far as new technology, and it's not really new, but it's kind of coming around. I've always been enamored with RFID stuff, and Code's got a division of RFID now that we're working with. And I think I remember 15 years ago, Walmart was pushing companies to do something with RFID, and it has come in fits and starts, and it really, you know, it hasn't progressed as well as anybody has thought that it might have by now. And it's not new technology, but I think the technology is finally getting to a point where it's going to start being more and more useful. So I like RFID a lot. I'm also a little bit intrigued with AI. You know, how is AI going to help things in our industry, or how is it going to help your customers? And is there a commercial way of bringing that through the channel so that, you know, you can present things to your customers that will help them and give them the benefit of AI as well?
All good ones, right? Yeah. There. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is the year of RFID.
Yes, I think so. I mean, we had a conversation about it just a couple weeks ago, yeah. And I think it's time for everyone to start taking it seriously.
No, yeah. It is. Yeah, it's not old. It's not new technology, right. But man, it's starting to.
I think people are finally starting to get it.
Oh yeah,
there's more and more, like Walmart. What was it? Chris Brown mentioned the Walmart blast off or whatever.
Yes,
that's
the blast
pushing all
off.
These
that's
other
right.
retailers yep. to start requiring it. So mm-hmm, yeah, I think we're getting there. So.
That's good advice right there, all across the board.
I agree. Good stuff. All right. Well, hey, let's wrap up as always with What's Tech Connecting with you.
Yes.
This is the segment of the show where we get to talk about whatever kind of technology, innovation, yeah. science, discovery, something that's got our attention.
Yep.
Dave, you mentioned earlier that your driver's licensing thing was kind of, you know, something that obviously is a big tech connecting with you right now. Anything else that you thought of that's something you're keeping an eye on?
Well, you know, since I'm fading off into the sunset, I haven't really been as up on new stuff coming out because I've been more worried about getting the driver's license technology going as far as codes go. So I've probably been looking more at fly fishing stuff, new technology and fly fishing than I am for technology for the channel, though.
Hey, I'm sure there's been innovation in the world of fly fishing. I mean, it's not the same as it used to be. There's a lot more stuff happening there than there used to be in the past.
For sure.
Indeed.
Yes. Yeah, yes. And I know you can spend a lot of money on some of that technology.
Yeah. Meaning,
yeah. You get a nice fly reel and oof.
Do yeah. like the sonar stuff yes. in your boat or whatever yes. to help you track the yes. fish and all that stuff. Yeah.
Hey, Dave, they just opened up one of these big Bass Pro Shops, like one of these shops, one of the super stores. And I've never seen so much fishing gear in my life. Yeah.
You can spend a paycheck or two of those.
Yeah. A little bit.
There you go. All yep. right. Dean, what's tech connecting?
Well, I got one that's appropriate for the industry. Here's the headline. Engineers create the world's smallest QR code.
Okay.
Embedded pattern with feature sizes close to 1/1000th of a millimeter.
Wow.
All right. So that's about as small as
how are you supposed to have even seen this thing to know that you need to scan it?
Well, it's only readable by infrared light.
Okay.
Did I mention that?
No, you did not. That makes more sense.
There you go.
Somehow I don't think I'm going to see this thing with my phone camera. Yeah. So
researchers kind of stumbled into this. They were collaborating on trying to understand how some like insects and some animals can kind of morph or become invisible.
Right.
You know, you've seen that where their skin can change and it like turns into the background
kind of
a thing. Apparently that's called brocosomes or something like that. It's just that magical structure.
Like brocosomes.
Right. Yeah. So in understanding that, they kind of got in off on this little tangent because brocosomes, the way they were, they're like little 3D soccer balls, if you can imagine, that when light hits it, there are certain cavities that absorb that light.
Okay.
And so they kind of took that and some of the ideas around that. And then if you look at this QR code that's created, in essence, you know, they're using these fundamental laws of physics around that, around the structure and how it absorbs energy and things of that nature, and creating these little micro environments where You know, certain light is absorbed, and when it does that, it creates a pattern. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, you can dictate that, and it creates this little itty bitty QR code. So they're going to start, you know, utilizing. They think that it has applications all over the place. There's security applications and stuff like that. Right. So, but Dave, you might have to stay in the industry a little bit longer, because now we need infrared readers, not just laser readers and stuff like that. We need infrared to get these mini little QR codes that are out there now.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Pretty cool. Yeah. So we'll see.
I always like miniaturization. I always think it's fascinating, the stuff that we miniaturize and why.
Well, so they've got security. You know, you can camouflage these things. Yeah, you can build them in. It's a little bit of a fascinating area.
Reminds me of like the spy movies where there's like that little, like maybe like a tiny little micro dot sticker on something or whatever that's embedded with like, you know, tons of data and information.
There
but
it is.
Almost invisible to the naked eye.
But in this case, you would need an infrared reader to read it, you know, so a little slightly different technology.
Good okay,
good
I like
stuff.
It.
All right. Yeah, what's tech connecting with you?
All right, so when I say former Disney Channel child star, you probably think of folks that have gone on to like acting and singing, you know, like Britney Spears, Ryan Gosling, Selena Gomez.
Yeah, all, the list
Christina
is
Aguilera.
Long.
Yeah, lots of folks that have gone this different route. Well,
yes.
What if I told you there was one, though, who's actually getting into a satellite aerospace technology and communication startup?
What?
Not something you typically would describe to your typical Disney Channel star, right? But, you know, these folks can go and branch.
They're multi-talented.
Too, yes.
Not only can they act.
So one in particular, actress and singer Bridget Mendler, who apparently was a star on such things as Good Luck Charlie, Wizards of Waverly Place, and The Click.
Huge one.
Now, Wizards of Waverly Place, that's the only one I've actually heard of there, but I am familiar with it. I think Selena Gomez was part of that, too.
Oh,
wasn't
yeah.
She? Anyway.
Big hit in our house.
She, you know, did not go the standard route of like, oh, I'm just going to go off and be a pop star or an actress or something.
Right.
And just do that, and that's my career. No. She decided she was going to go study at MIT.
Oh, my Lord.
And Harvard Law.
What?
And found a company called Northwood Space. With her husband, who and another investor who I think went to, I can't remember what they are. Oh, they both worked for Lockheed Martin at some point.
Okay.
So
rocket scientists.
Yeah,
yes.
So basically, as she put it in this article, this is a CNBC article, she said that she fell in love with space law, and it got her thinking about things that basically the fundamental idea of this company is creating more satellite dishes here on Earth.
Like,
receptor dishes. They call them... it's called the ground stations that they refer to as teleports.
Okay.
Basically helping connect satellites and making data send faster and easier from Earth to satellites and back and forth.
Yes, okay.
And basically the reasoning behind this is because there are actually very few of these teleports around the world.
Mm.
And as more and more satellites are up there, more and more space travel is occurring, you've got private space travel now starting to occur.
Okay.
Lots more data that needs to get transferred from terrestrial up into space. These stations, there's so few of them that like
I can envision
they're getting
this.
Booked up essentially, where it's like if you want to send something, like, all right, well, you got to wait 6 months because everyone else has got us booked up for the next, you know, 6 months or so.
So she's going to create like maybe a mesh of these
things
basically around?
A lot of these stations that this company is going to put out together that are fairly going to be much more affordable than your standard, you know, giant setup, a little bit easier to put together. They basically see it, you know, an opportunity to do installs as quickly as like a day to a week.
Oh, whoa.
Where they
okay.
can get one of these stations up and running that somebody could potentially use. And again, and also rather than like, hey, here's like a select group of stations around the world, an individual company that knows that they're going to be doing a lot of this could potentially have one of these stations on-prem and use it for themselves in order to start sending.
Is this an opportunity for farmers? You know how some farmers are turning their fields into either cell towers or wind towers?
Yeah, or like solar fields and stuff.
There you go. Yeah maybe now we can have
be surprised
some
if that's,
satellite communications going on here.
You got some empty space.
You and I need to buy some land so that we can start taking advantage of some of this stuff.
No doubt.
You got a farm somewhere? Are you retiring to a farm? Or maybe we can get you a little income here on some satellite communications gear?
Well, I'd be up for the additional income, but I have no farm.
Okay.
I don't care how much time and how much progress and innovation changes. The need for land
never goes away.
It's still very viable. So
that's right.
Coming soon, Northwood Space. They're hopefully going to expand the nature of communications with space. And again, I just think it's fascinating that, you know,
look what Disney's producing.
I feel like you hear about the Disney stars and like you hear about a lot of them that unfortunately have troubled, you know, Britney's had her troubles.
Selena,
Miley Cyrus has been controversial and stuff in the past.
Course, yeah,
you know, like
yeah, yeah.
it's nice to hear about someone to realize like, hey, these are folks that given the right opportunity could go.
Here's the problem. We don't hear about
things.
That much.
I know you don't. And I think it's because unfortunately people get the dollar signs in their eyes, you know, on the parent front and the talent front, you know, the producer front or whatever. We're like, hey, you know, don't bother with college. You know, we can get you into Hollywood and get you going there.
Make some real money.
So kudos to Bridget Mendler for
kudos
doing something
all the way. Yeah.
For making her bucks in the Disney sphere and then going off and doing something amazing.
Nice.
After the fact.
There you go.
All right. That does it for us today. That's What's Tech Connecting With Us. It is time for us to unplug. Dave Judy from Code. Thanks so much for joining us. If we don't speak to you again, enjoy retirement. You know, and don't and resist the urge to keep coming back out of retirement. You know, that's, you know, go enjoy it. Do that fly fishing, get your driver's license project off the ground and go coast through the rest of your life. Enjoy that.
Good stuff.
Thank you so much.
And as always, folks, please stay connected. Tech Connect Podcast is brought to you by Elo. Built with versatility in mind, Elo Edge Connect offers a wide assortment of peripheral options for your digital display. Whether for the endless aisle self-order or collaboration, you can seamlessly attach up to 4 peripherals to the touchscreen edge with the flexibility to add, remove, or change later as needed. I love this stuff. I love the idea of like, you got a thing.
Yes.
Here's some things you can add to the thing.
Yes.
And it makes the thing better.
Yes. That's
probably not how Elo would describe it.
Right.
Or want it described.
Maybe a little bit more sophisticated than their language.
Which is why I've got some ad copy here to help out with that.
Yes, 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 yes.
But in the end, that's kind of what we're doing.
Put a thing on a thing.
All right, let's talk about some of the things that
let's
you can
do.
Hit on. Status lights.
Yeah.
Temperature sensors. Mm. 3D or conference cameras. Mm. Barcode scanners. Mm-hmm. Card readers. Collaboration tools. Payment cradles. As always, I say this, I think, every time we do this ad.
Yeah.
You can't find peripherals to meet your customers' needs.
Yeah.
You're not trying.
Yeah. I don't think so. Yeah. For sure.
They got you covered there.
Yeah.
So get with the Edge Connect.
Can you hook up like a blender or something like that?
Maybe not. I don't know. But, you know, I don't know. Check in with Elo. Maybe they can.
I bet you they can. I bet you that's a challenge they would welcome. You know, because I can see like the bartending
application. I don't know why you need that.
Well, I don't know. You know, you walk up to an interactive kiosk. You want to order a strawberry daiquiri.
And it just blends it for you
And it blends it right there. Yep.
Spits it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how
talk about a peripheral.
I don't know how sanitary that is either. But okay. All right. So maybe contact Elo if you have ideas.
There you
what
go.
Your customers actually need, not Dean.
No.
He may not be the best angle for that. But to learn more about Elo's Edge Connect, check out the link in the show notes or contact your Blue Star account manager.